Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 56th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Josephine Okat, who came to Maine from South Sudan in 1995. She was born into an affluent family of professionals and leaders before the war broke out in Sudan, forcing her into a refugee camp in nearby Uganda for 9 years before coming to Portland, Maine, to be reunited with her father and family. She attended Portland High School and holds a bachelor's degree in social work from USM. Welcome, Josie, and thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you so much, Kate, for having me.
It's a pleasure. You come from a family of 7 boys and 6 girls, and I was wondering what your life was like for you in Sudan before the war ever started.
Before the war started in South Sudan, everything was so peaceful. Everybody was loving and caring, and my family was so happy because my dad was working a lot and making a lot of money with the Norwegian, and my mom was doing the same, so we have no problem. We never went through any going without any struggle or going without having food, but we have everything.
Can you say what your parents did for work?
My mom used to do a weaving, so she will make a lot of towel like for a little baby, and then they will take this to Norway, and then they will sell it there and then bring all the money to her. And my dad used to be a veterinary, and he will travel to different places, different country, during a mad cow disease, and he will get do all the injection for all the cows.
So your family was doing very well. You said that your first language was actually Norwegian. How did that happen?
Actually, when I was born, around the neighborhood where we live is all Norwegian. So, and when my mom started working for those Norwegian, they had to babysit me and teach me the language, and taught me Norwegian and taught me how to dance, and always every morning they don't want to make me breakfast. So it's like my whole life is based inside their house. And so my mom only just come to get me when I want to go to sleep. And so it was really fun speaking Norwegian and knowing that language. And my sister always say, "Oh my God, you speak funny language. Where do you get this language from?" And I just say, you know, from those people out there that babysit me. I have a 16 years old boy that babysit me, and he have a Suzuki, like a yellow Suzuki, and whenever my sister came over, he always say, "Oh, I'm gonna beat you guys up and I'm gonna run you guys over if you guys bother this girl." And
he was protective of you.
Yeah, so he would drive me around to make me happy. So it was like, oh, like he wanted to make me happy, so happy. He would dress me up really nice and try to make me happy. So I was like living a good, perfect life.
You know. Do you speak any Norwegian today?
Actually, no. Because when I was 1 to 5, I was speaking Norwegian. Then I started learning my language when I was 5. I was 5 years old, still I cannot speak my language. So I learned how to speak my language.
And what is your language?
Acholi. Acholi. Luo. Yeah, Acholi Luo.
You said that your last name, Okat, means the god of rain. And I'm curious about how your family came by that name.
The Okat, actually, because when a person born, when she a baby, you get born, you get born with a belly button that's shaped like a raindrop, like a crystal. So my grandfather was born like that. So he have that belly button. So, and they name him Okot. So everybody that have that, they name them Okot. So when it's raining too and you get burned, so they name you Okot because you get burned when it's raining. So, but for my grandfather was special because then he was actually the one, whenever it's not raining and dry season, he always the one call out the rain and then it will rain. So they call him the god of rain, and that's what the Okot means. So
I would imagine in a very dry climate, that would make you a pretty powerful person.
For my grandfather, because when we came to the village, my grandfather was already dead. So one time my brother found a crystal-shaped rain in front of our building. So he took this thing to, they call it the god of rain. So my father said, I have to take this to the god of rain because my father is already dead. So we took that crystal to him. And then afterward, the next day it started raining. And people were so amazed, like, oh, now we can grow our crops. And they were so happy. And at the time, we didn't even know what it is, but my dad knew exactly what it is. So,
wow. That's really fun. I love that. It's so very different than the way we name in our culture, isn't it?
Yeah. So we name based on most of our names mean something very powerful. And some, like for me, I'm a deer, like I'm a firstborn. If I say I'm a deer, everybody would know that I'm a firstborn. So
Adia,
yeah.
But you go by Josephine.
Yeah, but I go by Josephine.
That's cool. You were a refugee from a war that broke out in Sudan, and then you lived in Uganda for 9 years of your childhood. And I'm curious about what that was like for you and what kinds of things you learned about the world.
In the refugee camp, because my village is a border to Uganda, we actually walked to Uganda. And for us, some of us get a ride from somebody to get us over, but the older people, they have to walk to Uganda. Then when we get to that refugee camp right away in the center, we were just sitting, like explosion happened, like 3 kids get killed right away, right in front of us. And then from there, they say, oh, we're not going to let you guys be here because Joseph Kony and his rebel, they're still here, the Lord Army. They're here, they're going to come attack you guys, so we have to transfer you guys to a different refugee camp. So they took us in a plane, but that plane, I think they want to transfer food and stuff. And they took us to a different refugee camp. From there, I was like, everybody have nothing. They give us tent, the United Nations give us tent. And everybody started looking for fish. They start fishing, and like my mom was a single mom. With no husband, so we have no older person. At the time, we were all young, and I was the only one older. Maybe at the time, I was 5 to 6 years old. But then everybody have to make their own tent, so you have to make your own tent. So my mom made her own tent. But then when it started raining, we were inside the house, so the wind just blew out the tent away, and then we started crying, and, you know, she's like, oh, it's so sad. And then some guy saw us from the road crying, and he came over, tried to make the tent really strong. And then we were living inside a tent for some long time. And then my dad's family came and find us guy, and then they built us a house. But everybody was living on fish before the United Nations brought us some beans and rice and
just
corn.
Whatever you could find.
Yeah, so it was very hard, but everybody knew how to fish. Even a little kid will go with a clothes and try to get fish that way. And that was the only thing that people live on. They will sell that fish. They will eat that fish. You can do whatever you want to do with that fish to make a living. So,
was there any school on the refugee camp grounds?
Actually, right away when they started, there was a school right there. They started school. Everybody was like under the tree and trying to... Some teacher were there trying to educate kids, and they will come to your house if you are old enough, if you can reach your ear.
If you reach your hand over your head,
yes.
And the proportion is such that you can reach your ear, they think that you're ready.
Yeah, old enough to go to school. So that's how they will tell by your age, because there's no birth certificate. So from there, they just, I was home. They took my brother to school. They couldn't take me. They say I was too young. But I was older than my brother, but he was taller than me. So, but 2 years later, my mom went to the school and started complaining, said, why are you guys letting her stay in the school? They say she's too young, she cannot reach her ear. And my mom said, no, she's the oldest one because I'm the one who gave birth to her. No. So they took my brother back to first grade. They replaced me with my brother grade. So I was in second grade. So from
so
there.
You started school in second grade.
Yeah, in second grade. And then from there, I have no clue what even going on most of the time. And we have a monitor in the class and kid always fighting. And I remember my first fight when a little girl just tried, she's all actually. Because in Africa, there's no age, you know, so everybody go to school, like, you can be in the same class with me, you know, so. But when the fight start, they always want to fight you very bad, and then they, like, stop you after school, try to fight you. So I was fighting with her, and I was on top of her, beating her up, and then a lot of people, like, tried to pull me out from her. I was so mad because it was, you know, like, bothering me for no reason, and I was so sad. And then afterward, I was crying, and then they broke us apart, and then the teacher, like, oh, now I have to beat you guys up because they're going to, you know.
The teacher had to.
Yeah, the teacher have to discipline you. The teacher, whenever you get wrong, they always beat you up.
So the punishment for fighting is beating.
Yeah, beating. And also when you get wrong in anything, they beat you up. If you don't know the answer, they beat you up. So it's like that.
School gets scary that
so,
way.
So, yeah, they discipline you really bad. So, yeah, like, you cannot even sleep in a class. And it was very terrible because I remember my brother used to, in his class, say, oh, my teacher always say, a bear, you know? So, and then we say, what is a bear anyway? So for a long time, then we discovered that the bear, that's his saying, it was bird, you know? So because even teacher themselves, they don't know how to pronounce the word. So it was a bird, not a bear. So everybody called her Mr. A Bear.
In some ways, it sounds so normal, kids, you know, making up names for the teacher. In some ways, it sounds really intense.
Because imagine if your teacher can't pronounce anything and they're teaching you, and you keep saying the same word, nobody even understands what you guys are saying.
And it would be so easy to get it wrong.
Yeah, it would be so easy.
Can you describe what it was like for you arriving in Maine and starting in middle school here, and how you managed to thrive and emerge as a leader in all that?
So when I first arrived here, it was December 12, 1995, and it was a big snow day. I never seen snow in my life. And when I get out from the plane, I was like, oh, my God, America is amazing. No wonder they say it's like heaven when you come here. I told my dad, I say, salt everywhere. My dad said, that's not salt.
Salt.
Then I feel like it was cold, and my dad said, that's snow. I said, how come you don't have it in Africa? I said, it's just America. So being in America, because when you're in Africa, they say it's like you can easily talk to God and people have money and people so excited. You have a lot of opportunity. It's so easy.
That's what they say about the United States.
Yeah, back in Africa. So everybody want to come to America and everybody just waiting. A refugee came in Uganda and Kenya to come to America because, like, oh, if we can talk to God and have all this money, like, America have gold everywhere too, because in Africa it's all about gold. We don't even worry about money. It's like how many gold you have. Yeah. So, but when we get here, and I was like, it was so freezing, and we get in the car, my dad guide us home, they order us pizza, we didn't even know what pizza is, like, we couldn't even eat, we're like, oh, we don't want to eat that kind of food. They put us a first movie, I saw some movie, people getting killed, and I started crying. I was like, oh my God, this is a terrible world, why are they getting killed? And my sister said, oh, that's fake, but it's still, you know, like, it break my heart to see people getting killed, like, on
for
TV.
For entertainment.
Yeah. You know, so it was really hard. And from there, I remember going to the hospital for the first time. I was, like, telling the doctor my dreams. I said, I saw a place being bombed and this and that. And the doctor said, oh, told my dad, oh, your daughter have mental illness, you know, because there's nobody can know future, tell the future. So from there, my dad used to put a Bible under my pillow so to protect me, so I cannot have dream like that or see vision. So, but
you had seen a lot of real violence.
Yeah. So I've been through a lot, you know, like even in the village, my father's village where we were, the SPL used to come and bomb that place every time. So sometimes they start fighting from 6 to 6, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can eat, you can go outside, but we hide by a water place, you know. So it was very sad, and at the time we cannot even go to school, so there's no way you can go to school. Well, they're always fighting. They always come to our village to attack us because we live, there's an army base in where we live, and at the time the army base belonged to the northern part, to Khartoum. So, but the other people was from South Sudan, and they were attacking us time to time until they take that place over. Then my whole village and the leader say, let's just leave the place and walk to Uganda. That what happened. We left the whole village and just walk over to Uganda.
Josephine, it sounds like you lost so much. You know, you went from having nannies and a happy life and people protecting you to a village being bombed and leaving your home and country and your family getting divided.
Yeah, I lost actually so much in being in Sudan, because then when we left from this area of Norwegian, living good life, like we in different city. Actually, I didn't even know there's other poor place in South Sudan like that. I never even realized there's people that suffering, they're scared, that going without eating. But the way we were living, you know, it's like the same life. I cannot compare with my life right now, because I feel like I'm so poor that, you know, like I never been so poor living in this country, even my family as a whole, because we were having good life. We had everything. My stepmom was a nurse too, and she makes so much money too. Like in Africa, you when you build your own house, you don't even rent, you don't waste money on anything. So your money is your money. You can, the food is just there, you don't even have to buy for, like for my family, actually, all our food, they always get it from Norway. So the food that we eat, nobody eat. So, and all our clothes, they get it from Norway and from Kenya, too. We can't even wear a dress from or clothes from Sudan or Uganda. So, but we have, then afterward, when the war fall apart, this was around 1989, and we lost everything. And my mom was captured by the rebel, and my three sisters was captured, and that when everything fell apart. So we actually started feeling the pain of being poor, losing everything, and living as that we never going to survive, but to just believe that there's God, and to believe that our grandmother and our grandfather will protect us, because they're already on the other side, that how we used to believe. And
it gave you strength.
Yeah.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Josephine Okat. Josephine is a very unique person, and she's the only woman on the Leadership Council of the Portland Sudanese community. I was wondering if you could explain to us how you came to be the first female leader in your community.
Actually, my organization called South Sudan Acholi Community. It's just like for the Acholi Luo tribe in Portland. So I was actually, when they did the election, I was the vice president of the Acholi Community, South Sudan. And the real president resigned, and all those people have no choice. And then they say, oh my God, even though we never had achieved before, because in our culture or our belief, there's the only belief in the kingdom. So within the kingdom, there's only man in the kingdom. Only if the man married a woman, then the woman will become the queen. So when you are the chief or the whatever, it's more than being the president of the community, because they have more respect for you. Whenever something happened in the community, come to your house, whenever there's a funeral or buzzer or any kind of thing, or somebody having problem with somebody, they come to your house. Everybody, even a young person or older person, does respect you. They look at you as a role model. They look at you as a great leader, because everybody choose you to be that leader. And they all always depend on you for anything or even for advice. So when I became, when they say, oh, you have to, I say, I really don't want to be, because in history, there were any woman being a chief in a Choli community, even South Sudanese community as a whole. So I cannot be. And then from that, I said, oh, please, you know, you're very educated. You get a degree. None of those people here, they even get a degree. You came here since you were young. We are all new men. You have to help us. I said, okay, I will be the chief now. Then when I took over, there was a big conference going on. It was all the Luo and Acholi tribe from different places. They're supposed to come together, unite, and talk to talk about development and all that kind of stuff. So when I took over, it was really a lot of work. So, and I have to meet with the chief of Acholi in South Sudan as a whole, then another chief, then me, the old man. That one thing is old man.
Do your children know how unique this is that their mom is the chief?
No, my son always asks me, like, why do you have to go to the meeting every time? Why do you have to do this? Why do you have to be the chief of the community? But they don't understand that. They do not understand what it means. Even like when people call me Rod, you know, Rod is like a king. So in my language, Rod means king. So when they call me Rod, sometimes I'm just like, ah.
Awkward.
Okay. So it makes me actually feel like, okay, I've done so much, because even when doing the conference in November, doing Thanksgiving, I was talking in front of people. At the time, I was very skinny, like 95 pounds, and they hear all this voice, like strong voice, powerful voice about making a change in the community, working together, loving each other, you know, and being united just to make our country or even our place where we live to develop. And people like, wow, we didn't know she can talk like that. We thought she's going to faint in front of people, you know, like over 1,000 people at a time. And then everybody believed that, oh, she can't talk, she's too short. Maybe she's
too short to talk.
Yeah, is he gonna get nervous? So when they heard all this thing, they were so excited. They said, "Oh my God, you brought a great name to our community. Oh. This is the first time it happened." And then they wanna make this as a documentary. And
you felt as if those words were just coming to you.
Yeah,
oh, that's beautiful.
But then, like before that, the lady say, "Oh, there's angel gonna stand with you." You know that how I believe that there's angel standing with me to release all this nervousness. Like,
so you're not leading all by yourself.
Yeah.
You have a background in leading teens in traditional dance, in being a community advocate and a social worker caseworker. Mm. And I wonder what you'd like to do next with all your skills and what you're dreaming for the future.
Actually, my big dream was, since I was young, I always want to help people. So help young people, actually, and elderly, because I feel like they're the most vulnerable one, that people just don't pay attention on them, especially the elderly. So I just want to open a center where the elderly can come, share their story, and feel more comfortable, have somebody to be there with them so they can tell their story to. And also to just share because in Africa, actually, they have elderly are very unique because they are our book. We don't have a book to read. So our book is just the elderly telling you a story about what happened, maybe during World War, whatever. So they all tell you the story about kidnapping happening, or even kid used to get kidnapped during the night. So it was all the story from the elderly, get passed over from elderly to elderly. So that's how we learn history and
oral history.
Yeah. Mm. So, and then the other thing is to open like a youth center, because I feel like there's a lot of young people lacking of a resource in the community, lacking of education. So whenever they fell behind, nobody even take a time to help them so they can learn and become independent and get a job. So I feel like real young people need a great support to help them to become, you know, somebody better in life. Because being a mentor is a big thing. Me growing up, I had a mentor in my life. So that always say, Josephine, always think about your future. So, Jen, please don't tell me that. I know I'm thinking about my future. But always, as she dropped me off, she always say that to me. And that make me very strong. Like, why is she saying this to me? And while she's not even my mother and my family doesn't say anything. So time to time, I would just do my work and go to her office. Even when I was doing my internship, I was doing it in her office. But most of all, these young people, they're lacking of mentor and they're lacking of resource, even within the community, even in Poland here. There's no center for youth, even especially for the refugee and immigrant kids. They have no youth center. Like in Luzon, they have youth center in Luzon. They have all this center for refugee kid, but whereas in Poland here, there's no nothing, no youth center whatsoever, you know. Like my plan is just to have the center to help them look for a job, to help them maybe go back to school, to help them just get that skill so they can complete job application, you know. Like for me, I know everybody are unique and everybody deserves a chance and opportunity that we have, and everybody should have the same opportunity to learn, you know. So education, it's never too late to learn anything, you know. You're never too old to learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Josephine, you are an intuitive and powerful woman with a strong connection to other people, both in your South Sudanese community and the wider community. And thank you for your willingness to come on New Mainers Speak and share your thoughts and experiences with us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. I am Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Josephine Okat. We will close today's program with a song she has chosen for us. Can you tell us what this song is and why you chose it?
The song is actually a song about two women that the other lady, she get dumped by her boyfriend and went to the next, a different lady. And the other lady called, the other lady say, you know, what he did to me, he will do it to you the same thing. As long he get done with you and get what he want from you, he will dump you and leave you to suffer like I did too. So the elder lady didn't want to listen. Then when that happened, so they came together and then make the song and then start singing the song. And that how sometimes I feel like as a woman, sometimes we became so weak when a man tried to get between us while we are friend. And so then when I'm telling you, if I'm saying, oh, you know, he's not a good person, but then that person will get mad at me. So, but it's a great song.
Can you tell us the artist's name?
It's Juliana. She's a Baganda singer from Uganda.
Thank you.
Patapotea. You remember? Mina wewe ni marafiki toka zamani.